Welcome to Expert Extra, a new feature of the Inside 254 podcast, where we sit down with an expert in a field to help us and you make sense of current events. We hope you enjoy it. We are here today with Monita Bell, who is the author of Getting Hair Fixed, Black Power, Transvaluation, and Hair Politics. She also taught for 5 years as a college English instructor before joining Teaching Tolerance, where she serves as senior editor. Teaching Tolerance is an online project that has many elements, primarily for K-12 teachers, including a blog. And finally, her Teaching Tolerance magazine story called 100 Years in the Making was about the genesis and educational programming of the Smithsonian National Museum for African American History and Culture, and that article just won a Green Eyeshade Award, which recognizes the best in journalism in the southeastern U.S. So congratulations on that, Monita.
Thank you very much. I was very excited about that, and I should specify that it was second place.
You know what? It's a great honor. I think it sounds like an incredible accomplishment. I'm so happy for you. So
thank
what
you
we're
very much.
So what we're talking about today for this Expert Extra is about social justice and advocating for social justice in schools. So let me just start with a question. When I say social justice, what does that mean to you?
I think to me, especially regarding the work that I do, it means equity in policies and practices, as well as in opportunities and resources for people to have access to opportunities and resources. I would say overall, that means everyone has the opportunity or everyone gets what they need.
That's a good definition. I wanted to start there because I don't want to assume that our entire listenership understands necessarily what we mean when we talk about social justice and the need for social justice. And I think you see a lot of pushback in the general population when people like us say, we need to advocate for social justice. You get a lot of instant defensiveness of, no, there's no problem. And so let's talk about schools. Let's start with why. Why is it important to advocate for social justice in schools?
Well, first of all, I think this relates to a point you were just making, which is there's this defensiveness or this of social justice, and that that's not something that we need, right? And that perspective comes from a place of privilege, and in many cases, power, and those two are often related. And so when we talk about social justice in the larger society, it definitely correlates with why we need it in schools, because schools are little microcosms of what happening in the larger society. And I think all we have to do is turn on the news. When you think about where we are at this point in 2017, post-election rhetoric heard during the 2016 election was anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim, and that's being reflected in schools. We have kids who are showing up saying to their Latino classmates, we're going to build a wall. Or folks who are actually, and when I say folks, I do mean children, who are using the name Trump to intimidate Latino peers and actually chanting Trump, Trump, Trump to, in no uncertain terms, let their Latino peers know, you don't belong here, you're not equal to us, and you're inferior. And we know that we see iterations of that in the larger society as well. And so schools are not immune to the ills that we see, the injustices that we see outside of school. And in many cases, young people are taking what they hear in their homes or in their communities and bringing it to school. That is the case because we cannot separate school communities from our communities at large. Social justice absolutely should be part of the conversation and should be advocated in schools.
That makes sense to me. I hope it makes sense to everyone listening. And so let's get into some practical terms. It's sort of a three-pronged question. How can teachers, parents, and then even students advocate for social justice in their schools?
Okay, well, first of all, I'll start with teachers. And that's, you know, in my line of work, that's who we keep front and center. And teachers have the curriculum at their disposal. And so some teachers may work in states where, there's a set curriculum or they have certain standards or whatever, but that doesn't mean that social justice can't be part of that curriculum. By simply exposing to, say, classroom readings that address social justice issues, which means they're not only going to be reading about it, but thinking and writing about it more than likely, then that right there is already giving them an exposure to different perspectives, an exposure to issues that they might not otherwise be engaging with, and doing it in an academic setting. So it's not something that's just emotional, or not something that's even what some folks might argue is too political. It's part of an academic endeavor because you can do both at once. So I would say that's the first part.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up about being an academic endeavor. You can do both at once, because I see a lot of people saying, "Well, no, you can't." Well, yes, and I'm glad you said that. So, thank you.
Right, and then also people who say it doesn't belong in schools. To that, I would say when we're talking about social justice once again and about everyone getting what they need and being treated fairly, we're talking about at the basic level humanity, that every human being has inherent dignity and should be treated as such. When issues of social injustice come to bear, for the most part, they have to do with people with less power, people who have an identity or identities that don't correspond to whatever the mainstream or dominant group is. We have to stand up and say, regardless of your identity, regardless of where you're from, regardless of your religion or non-religion, you have the right to be treated equitably. And so to then say it doesn't belong in schools, you're basically saying that there are people whose very humanity is not worth addressing in schools, but others are. And so that right there is like you can't get around the fact that that's problematic. And so school is a prime place to be thinking and talking about these things. The second part, I think, comes down to a prime responsibility of teachers. And I do want to preface this by saying teachers have so much on their plates and they have so much pressure placed on them that they have to be everything to every child. And I'm sure that pressure is immense. However, at the base of all that is a responsibility to the well-being of young people, the young people that they serve. And so that means at a school level, at a classroom level, if there are certain groups of students, say, you can look at your discipline data in your school. If students in the minority in a school overrepresent discipline and referral rates, that is a clear issue of equity. And it's up to not just teachers, but educators to stand up and say, wait a minute, we clearly have a systemic problem of equity in this school. We're here to serve every student here. It's us to address this issue to make sure that every student is getting a fair shake. It's really a big part on teachers, too. And I would say every educational professional in a school building to be advocating where they see injustices happening in their school to step up and say, we're going to address this so that every single child in this building is being treated fairly and getting what they need so that they can learn and thrive.
Like what you're hearing? Hey, Podbean listeners, see that green Become a Patron button at the top right of your screen? You can click on that, donate $1 a month, and get a cool sticker, a Facebook shout out, and our undying gratitude. iTunes listeners, we didn't forget about you. If you go to our Facebook page, you'll see a blue Shop Now button. Click that button, and it'll get you to that same site. Thanks for keeping us sustainable.
And so parents and people in the community, and then even students, is there anything you would recommend that those people consider doing or taking action on?
I think, it's so important for parents and families, parents, guardians, whoever is responsible for the care of their student. First of all, to be partners with the educators in the school. So often families are their kids' first and number one advocate. Did you hear about the school in Princeton, I believe, in which two Muslim girls were told that they had to get notes from their parents to wear hijab at school, basically proving that they're Muslim? Did you hear about that?
I have not heard about that yet. Thank you for alerting me. No, I did not.
I'm sorry. That was not Princeton. That was Virginia. I'm thinking about another situation in Princeton, right. So let me not mix up stories. There are so many stories.
There are so many. Right. And that's the thing. There are so many stories to choose from. It's kind of hard to keep track because this happens all the time. It's frustrating.
In my line of work, we hear these stories every single day. And that's why we can't be lax about this. Because I would say, especially in today's climate in 2017, students of color, like I said, Muslim students or students who are perceived to be Muslim, BT students who are perceived to be undocumented, whatever it may be, discriminations against them have been super ramped up. So this story, the two young ladies for each jobs just started the evening of May 26th. So they were told that they had to have permission notes from their families, basically proving that they were Muslims and that would justify their wearing the hijab. Otherwise, they were said they would have to take them off, face disciplinary action like suspension. Obviously, the parents in that case definitely had to step up and say, wait a minute, there's something not right about this. You're treating my child differently because of their identity. For parents, I would say it's just so important for parents to really be engaging with the school. So with teachers, for sure, and definitely with administrators as well, because they're partners. They're all stakeholders in the child's successful education and educational experience. So if they can at least try to work together, in some cases, the systems in place don't make that easy, or the people behind those systems don't make it easy. After parents and families may have, you know, attempted to work with the school on a situation regarding students, if they are continually met with resistance and a lack of cooperation, then it's time to make some noise, get loud, and join with others who share their concerns to bring broader attention to the issue. I had been listening to your episode with Chris and the need to get like-minded people together, because it starts, if you're going to bring light to an issue on a broader scale, getting people together, because if you are experiencing an issue, then it's very likely that others are as well. And so the strength in numbers approach.
Anything that you would recommend
for...
Well, no, but and hopefully you, yeah, I'm just curious, because sometimes we have students who are maybe listening. Our demographics sort of skew a little bit older, but I know we at least have some college students who listen to us. So I'm thinking maybe even at the older level, because I think it's a lot to ask younger kids to take on that responsibility. Although I know that kids do step up on their own.
They absolutely do.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm thinking more like maybe college level. Is there something maybe you would recommend college students can do to advocate in their schools for social justice?
I would say, once again, getting people together. Get folks together who you know are aware of the same issues you are or experience the same issues you are. And I think being able to get together and talk those out can kind of clearly lay out the problem, right? So now we've got our minds wrapped around exactly what the problem is. And then also together, you can try to come up with some solutions. It's also super important if you can get, say, a faculty member or some other professional on campus who can be like a mentor or sponsor or something like that, that can help you when it comes to communicating with those in power about these issues and to try to make change. And I think it's really important that when you come to those in positions of power with a problem, if you've then already kind of talked about what the solution, it can help make it easier to work toward those solutions. And so we are all about collective action here at Teaching Tolerance, working together to make change. That's how things get done. Nobody can do it by themselves. So you might have somebody out front who is perceived as a leader or a champion, but it takes the collectives to make the change. You can also be on the lookout for groups already existent on your campus or around the community that can help you in advocating as well for necessary change. For example, the Southern Poverty Law Center has a college arm called SPLC on campus that's about this very thing, helping college students to tap into their own power to make change by joining together and getting that kind of action started. You can visit, I don't want to get the URL wrong, but you can look up SPLC on campus. As far as I know, at this point, there are over 20 college chapters around the country, and they're growing. If there isn't necessarily one on your campus, usually there could be one near you, or you can work on starting your own chapter. This program is growing. We have people here who can support you. So that's just one example. So there are a number of organizations, depending on what the issue is. If you're not really ready to start your own initiative that way, that you can tap into something that's already existing.
That's wonderful. You've provided an excellent perspective, fantastic definitions, really practical advice. And that's something that I think our listeners really appreciate. And so do we. So thank you so much for your time today.
You are so welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this Expert Extra. For more information on our podcast and to find episodes, please visit Inside254Site, that's S-I-T-E, .wordpress.com. You can find us on Podbean and iTunes, and please follow us on Facebook and Twitter for all the latest. Thanks for listening.